studying our His Word this week, thinking further about the Gospel of Luke, and I hope that you're being blessed from the devotionals and reading through the New Testament. Certainly a blessing that always is to be able to walk along with Jesus and see Him pictured in the Gospels. And Luke records a longer incident here than the other Gospels. It is referred to in the book of Mark. But Luke gives us a longer description about when Jesus goes home. What is it like to go back to your hometown? Some of you never left your hometown, but a lot of you are transplants to Mayfield, and you may go back to your hometown. For example, if you go back for a high school reunion, what's that like? Everybody coming in and sharing their experiences and things like that, and of course, considering how they've aged and what's going on in their life, you know, all these different thoughts we have about a reunion, or maybe going home for a home football game on a Friday night in the fall, or going to your home church. It can be interesting and different to go back home. Jesus is going to return home in Nazareth. And after He has begun His ministry, He's just gone through the temptations in the first part of chapter 4. And now He goes back after doing some miracles in Capernaum. He returns to His hometown of Nazareth. And this is really a somewhat odd passage, I must say, because it seems that everything's going really well. I mean, it's like they're listening to His sermon. They're agreeing with His sermon. It feels like they are marveling at Him. And they are impressed with Him. They're wanting some miracles done by Him. And then the next thing you know, they're ready to throw Him off the brow of the hill. Just throw Him off a cliff. It's really unique how this passage works. And what I want us to do is I want us to ask some questions that we might ask if we read this text. And I think I want to do a couple things about this. First of all, I want to illustrate that there's a good Bible study method. Is just to think, what questions does this text, does this passage bring out? And then try to answer those questions. And then you'll also have some questions for your own life from that. And so we want to ask three questions tonight of this text. And so let's begin by reading verses 14 and 15. Jesus returned in the power of the Spirit to Galilee, and a report about Him went out throughout all the surrounding country. And He taught in their synagogues, being glorified by all. So notice that Jesus had been making quite a name for Himself. He had become the boy who had left Nazareth, and now He was getting famous, we might say. He had become very popular. And He taught in the synagogues and was being glorified by all throughout the region of Galilee. And then He goes to His hometown, verse number 16, of Nazareth, where He had been brought up. And as was His custom, as it was His habit, He went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day, and He stood up to read. The first question I want us to ask is, how did Jesus handle returning home? How did He handle it? Well, let's read verses 16 through 24 to find out. So He goes to the synagogue. He stood up to read. And the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was given to Him. He unrolled the scroll, found the place where it was written. And He reads from Isaiah 61. The Spirit of the Lord is upon Me, because He has anointed Me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent Me to proclaim liberty to the captives, recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. He rolled up the scroll. He gave it back to the attendant and sat down. The eyes of all who were in the synagogue were fixed on Him. He began to say to them, "Today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." And all spoke well of Him. They were all speaking well of Him. They were impressed. They marveled at the gracious words that were coming from His mouth. And they said, "Is this not Joseph's son?" And He said to them, "Doubtless you will quote to Me this proverb, 'Physician, heal yourself.' For what we have heard You did at Capernaum, do here in your hometown as well." And he said, "Truly I say to you, no prophet is acceptable in his hometown." Notice some things about how Jesus handled returning home. First of all, he acted the same way he did everywhere else. This was his custom. This was his habit. He was making a practice of going around to the synagogues and preaching. And so when he goes back to his hometown, he goes to the synagogue to preach, to teach. We see an ancient description of worship in the synagogue here. In that culture, we see that he stood up to read, and then he would sit back down. And this was how they, it seems we find from other synagogue practices, how they would often do it, is that they would stand up to read the passage, then they would sit down and discuss the passage. And you would often have a rabbi or an influential teacher like Jesus who would then explain the passage that was read. And you also have all these scrolls. We might picture all these scrolls over here. And sometimes they would have a set reading for the day. But it seems that Jesus particularly selected the scroll of Isaiah. And he chose the passage where he would read from. This is very similar to sermons, isn't it? This is where we get the practice of sermons. We see this in the book of Ezra as well, when the Levites were preaching and reading the text, and then it says that they gave the sense of the text. In other words, they read the text and explained the text. Preaching, at its most basic and biblical form, is when the text is read and then explained. And so Jesus is going to read and explain the text. But he acted the same way he did everywhere else. He spoke the truth. He's going to read this passage, and then notice he says, this passage today, verse 21, has been fulfilled in your hearing. He didn't back away from that truth. He spoke the truth. He told them who he really was and what he was about. He claimed this scripture, this messianic psalm, this messianic prophecy about in the Spirit of the Lord was going to be upon the Messiah and he's going to do these great things, proclaim good news, and do these miraculous words. That he claimed that for himself. And then he, that's the next question, let me go back up to these. And thus, he spoke the truth when he was there. Now, let's make a little application before we go to the next question. When we return home, and let me just say in a broader way, if this is your home, if you've always been here, we need to learn a lesson from Jesus. And that is, no matter the crowd we're in, be who you are. Be who you are. Don't put on a pretentious face to try to fool people. Be who you are. Jesus goes home. He understands. We're going to find out that his home people are not going to be willing to receive him. He's going to say a prophet is without honor in his hometown. He understands that it is hard often for the hometown people to view you as you really are. You know, that's true in a lot of ways, isn't it? That it's often hard to be seen differently than just that young boy when you go back home, or that young girl just that grew up there. But Jesus was who he really was. And so I think it's important that if you're ever in situations, social settings, and in your old life you weren't a Christian, and you lived in ways that were not godly, and then you go back to those same friends, it may take faith and it may take courage, but be who you are now. Speak the truth. Don't feel pressure. Don't allow the pressure to fit back into the way you used to be impact you. Be who you really are. Speak the truth for God. Our temptation is to change ourselves when we get in those situations, to revert back to the way we used to be, to pretend to be somebody we're not. But Jesus was who he really was, even if they didn't like him. And they're going to want to throw him off the cliff. They end up not going to like him. But Jesus didn't change who he was just because he went back home to his hometown people. The second question I want us to ask is, how did the Nazarenes see Jesus? How did they see him? Well, they see him as Joseph's son. In verses 16 through 30, we find out that they're going to call him Joseph's son. He's going to quote this long passage of Scripture. And then in verse number 22, they say, "Is this not this Joseph's son?" And then Jesus will reply, "Doubtless you will quote to me this proverb, 'Physician, heal yourself.'" And the idea is, from this proverb, is help us out. Be loyal to your own people. Do these same miracles that you're doing in Capernaum, do here in your hometown as well. That's what Jesus says. And Jesus says, verse 24, "Truly I say to you, no prophet is acceptable in his hometown. But in truth I tell you, there were many widows in Israel." And now he tells this story about Elijah and Elisha. "There were many widows in the days of Elijah, when the heavens were shut up 3 years and 6 months, and a great famine came over all the land. And Elijah was sent to none of them, but only to Zarephath, the land of Sidon, to a woman who was a widow. And there were many lepers in Israel in the time of prophet Elisha, and none of them was cleansed, but only Naaman, the Syrian." How did the Nazarenes see him? Well, it's hard to overcome Jesus as a boy growing up there. They saw him as the carpenter's son, as Joseph's son. They were expecting, it seems, a political Messiah. There's two prominent beliefs in Judaism at that time that you're aware of. Number one, every generation believed that the coming of the Messiah was going to come in their generation. They had a fervoristic belief, just this, you know, messianic fervor in that time that the Messiah is going to come and he's going to come now. They had that belief. So there was this excitement that Jesus was the Messiah, and they wanted him to do some miracles, and they wanted to see him do that. But the second belief connected with that belief was that they wanted the Messiah to vanquish the Gentiles, to get the Gentiles out, restore and bless Israel. Now, I want you to go back and read with me Isaiah 61, the passage Jesus reads. Isaiah 61. And verse 1 and following. Notice verse 1 is the same as Jesus reads. Basically the same. Jesus was reading from the Septuagint, so it was a little different in the Greek translation. But basically the same. Your version probably renders it basically the same. Now look at verse 2. "To proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Now, if you notice, Jesus stops at the first part. Back in verse 19 of Luke 4, you have "to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." But look at Isaiah 61, verse 2. Notice the second half of that verse, "to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God." Now, this may not mean a lot to us initially, but I want to explain the significance of this. Jesus does not quote the second part of that verse. He leaves out the judgment, the day of vengeance brought by our God. Here's the belief, it seems, at that time. This was viewed as a messianic prophecy. The Messiah would come. He's going to release the Jews from this prison. He's going to bring all these wonderful things. And he's going to bring vengeance upon our enemies. Nazareth, these citizens believed and were hoping Jesus was that Messiah. He was going to come and he's going to bring vengeance upon the Gentiles. He's going to throw those evil Romans out. Now, they were expecting this type of Messiah. And Jesus, back to Luke chapter 4, Jesus does not quote that because he knows that. And he says, I want you to know I've come to preach this message. But then he says that you're wanting to just use me, position heal yourself, do these miracles. You're just about what I can do for you. And then he says, truly, you're not going to accept me because, probably referring to the long lineage of rejection of prophets, you're going to reject me just like a prophet. Now, if you turn to Mark chapter 6, you have this idea recorded in Mark that he is rejected. They are astonished at his words. But then when they think about him growing up there, is not this the carpenter's son, the son of Mary, the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon? They took offense at him. Verse 4, Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his hometown among his relatives and in his own household. Verse 5, and he could do no mighty works there except that he laid a hands on a few sick people and healed them. And he marveled because of their unbelief. They refused to believe in him. They rejected Jesus. He was not accepted by his own people because they were interested in him doing these miraculous works, and him being this kind of Messiah. The bottom line is, they did not view Jesus appropriately. How do we see Jesus and others? Then we'll talk as well at this time about why does he use this story then of Elijah and Elisha? Because Elijah and Elisha in both instances are rejected by the Jewish people. And whom do Elijah and Elisha go to? Both of them go to Gentile women. The widow of Zarephath in the land of Sidon and Naaman the Syrian. Not women. One was a woman, one was a man. Naaman the Syrian was a gender on things. And they heal both Gentiles. Now that's going to figure into our next question. But right now, let's think about this one. How did they see Jesus? He wasn't the Jesus that they wanted. They wanted a Messiah that would do miracles, that would bring vengeance upon the Gentiles. But Jesus said, that's not my message. I'm bringing a spiritual kingdom. I'm not going to bring vengeance on the Gentiles, but in fact, I'm like Elijah and Elisha. The Jewish people are going to reject me, and I will go to the Gentiles. Now, let's think about this question. How do we see Jesus and others? You know, they wanted Jesus riding in on a white horse overthrowing the Romans. They wanted Jesus that would do all kinds of miracles. They didn't want the Jesus who just cared about the poor and the brokenhearted. What do we think? You know, obviously we don't know, but what would we think of Jesus if he came into our church? His love for the poor, his care for a spiritual relationship. Many times I think we get, you know, wrapped up in physical things. Jesus had this hunger and thirst for spiritual. They're getting wrapped up in physical things. They're about the miracles. They're about the overthrowing the Gentiles. Jesus was about spiritual things. What would Jesus be like? What if he went outside of our parameters and our thoughts? Would we reject him? Really, we might apply that like this. What about in our own prayer life when Jesus doesn't answer it the way we think he should answer it? Kind of like what we were talking about this morning. If we're in a condition where we feel like, why are we here? And it's hard to be content in that position.
Do we still love Jesus? What about if there's things that Jesus asks us to do, like love our enemies? Forgive those who have wronged us. Do we still like that Jesus when He commands us to do those hard things? You see, I think they had known Jesus. You know, this is a small town, not a real big town, as we think about it. They had watched Him grow up. He had probably attended that synagogue for years. And now He's gone away. He's a man. He's 30 years old. He comes back. He's doing all these miracles. They're excited about it. They want to show Him off. Yes, this is the guy from our hometown. Let's put up a sign and say, Jesus came from Nazareth. But He wasn't the kind of Jesus they wanted to put a sign up about. And I think in our own life, it's like Job. You know, Job had to let God be God. And we have to let Jesus be Jesus. And sometimes that means He may not always be the Jesus we expect or we make. We have to allow Him to define who He is and accept that. Now let's move to I've got one quick illustration here that I saw in my notes I wanted to use. Thinking about this idea here, how do we see Jesus in others? There was a Christian song talking about how they looked at Jesus and how we should look at others. And when we think about this concept, how do we see others? You know, they're looking down on the Gentiles and how Jesus is trying to get them to see the Gentiles. How do we see other people? This song a few years ago by Brandon Heath called Give Me Your Eyes. And it's about this petition to have the eyes of God. And I just want to read a part of it. He says, give me your eyes for just one second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see. He talks about that concept of thinking about everybody that you cross as you go throughout your day, whether it's the little girl, he says, or the man in the black suit, to see them as God would see them, as Jesus would see them. He talks about having the eyes of Jesus for the brokenhearted, the poor. And that's what the Nazarenes are missing. Jesus is talking about, I've come to proclaim good news. I've come to proclaim liberty. I've come to proclaim recovery of sight to the blind, liberty to the oppressed, to proclaim the year of Jubilee is the idea. And they don't see it through the eyes of Jesus. So let's address the final question. Why did they get so upset? Now that's the hard part here. Why did they get so upset? I mean, all right. You know, I'm sure all of y'all have walked away. Let's just be honest. Y'all have had some times where you thought, well, Josh kind of missed it this morning. In fact, I don't even really agree with him. He just, I don't really know if I even like that sermon. But none of y'all, thankfully, have ever tried to take me out to the cliff, or in Mayfield, we'd have to climb up on a building, I guess, and throw me out the window of the hall hotel down here. What made them go from, man, this guy's awesome, do some miracles here, to, Jesus, we're throwing you off the brow of the hill? And probably the idea is they're going to throw him off and then stone him. I mean, how did they go from marveling to wrath? That's what it says. They had wrath. Well, the stories of Elijah and Elisha are, I think, a key part of that. Because Elijah and Elisha, Jesus talks about how the Jewish people, the Israelites, rejected the prophets. Therefore, they went to these Gentiles. They went to the Gentiles. Jesus knew their attitudes about only wanting some kind of miracle. So He tells this story about the rejection of the prophets and them going to foreigners, going to these strangers, these Gentiles. The point is, Jesus is saying, you want a kingdom where the Jews rule, where the awful Gentiles are destroyed. But I have come to save all peoples. In fact, the Jewish people are often going to reject me, as he often talks about, and I am going to open my kingdom up to the Gentiles. I've come for all, even the Gentiles. Why did they get so upset? They got so upset because the thing that makes people maybe have the most wrath and the most hatred is plain old prejudice, plain old racism. If you think about it, racism can elicit such a strong change. I think about this story. These people go from marveling. Why? Because he starts reading that. Jesus is a Jewish man. They're thinking, yeah, preach it. And then he leaves off the part about the Gentiles need to be destroyed. And then he tells two stories about how God's prophets didn't go to the Israelites but went to the Gentiles. And they get his point. You're saying that you're a Messiah who cares about all people. Well, then you can't be our Messiah. Later on in the book of Acts, when Paul is on trial before the Jewish mob and they're wanting to hear him out and they're listening to him, his conversion story and about how he was on the road to Damascus and all those things happened, and it says they listened to him up into the word, and the idea, what was the word? Until he mentions that Jesus told him to go and preach the gospel to the Gentiles. And once they heard him say, Jesus said go to the Gentiles, that's when they wanted to put Paul to death. Racism, hatred, elicits strong emotions. You know, we're in our country. We've seen, sadly, some of the things that have gone on, how racism can be such a divisive issue and how it can elicit such strong emotions. And here we see that it elicits strong emotions so that they even wanted to throw Jesus off the edge of a cliff. Reminds us of the book of Jonah and how Jonah had such strong emotions about God saving the Gentiles that he wanted them to be destroyed, and he goes out in chapter 4 and sits out waiting for God to destroy them. Now, it's also interesting to note, I want to real quickly notice that they take him out to the brow of the hill. This is verse 29 and 30. They take him out to the brow of the hill to throw him off. And by the way, there's several hills that would fit that description in Nazareth. We don't know for sure which one this was, but it's kind of up on a high area. And I want you to go back to chapter 4, verse number 10. Satan says, if you are the Son of God, throw yourself down from here, for as it is written, you shall command his angels concerning you to guard you, and on their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone. It's interesting, I never noticed this until a commentator pointed this out, that what happens in chapter 4, 29 and 30 is really the same temptation that Satan tried Jesus with in 4, 10, and 11. Let's just replay this a little differently. Suppose Jesus really wanted to give them a sign, and he was like you and I, and a little bit prideful, and a little bit, all right, I'm going to show you guys who I really am. He could have allowed them to throw him off the cliff. And he could have had angels swoop down and rescue him. He's the Son of God. I mean, he could have had whatever happen, right? That's what Satan says. Throw yourself off the cliff. Angels will come down and everybody will know you're really the Son of God. But I want you to notice how Jesus handles this. He doesn't allow them to throw him off the cliff. I think that it was a miracle what he does. But it is the most low-impact miracle you could do. He just disappears, if you will. He just walks through the crowd and leaves. He doesn't create a big stir. He doesn't do a sign where everybody says, "Wow, He is the Messiah." What does He do? The Bible describes it as if He just disappears. He just vanishes through the crowd. Passing through the mist, He went away. Now, I don't think that necessarily He just evaporated from one place to another. I think it was just miraculously He passed through the crowd. They could not hold Him. They could not touch Him. They could do nothing to Him. He just went away. Pretty interesting to think about. Now, as you think about, those are questions you can use to figure out what this text is saying. But after you've done this with any text, then you turn around and you say, "All right, that's what the questions that I had, and that's what happened in that passage. But now let's see what the reason the Holy Spirit gave this story to us is so we can learn from it." So what questions does this text ask us? Well, I think it asks us, how do we handle our old friends when we return home? Are we true to ourselves? Are we true to Christ? Or do we pretend? How do we see Jesus? Do we really see Jesus as the Messiah? Or do we try to make an idol out of Jesus and make Him into who we want Him to be? And finally, how do we handle our temptations to be prejudiced? Our hatred for people that are different from us? Do we allow our wrath to be stirred over prejudiced feelings? You see, when you read this passage, you have to ask yourself those things. And how do we handle them? This is what Jesus does. It's what the Word does. It turns the questions upon ourselves. If you're here this evening and you're not a child of God, we encourage you to respond to Christ, to put Christ on in baptism. If you need to rededicate your life, please come as together we stand and as we sing.